Hi everyone, I'm here with Oliver Merive, who is the founder of the Fungi Academy, which is a mushroom ecology retreat center, an educational co-living space on the shores of beautiful Lake Atitlan in the highlands of Guatemala. So Oliver, what got you into mushrooms and fungi?
Hi. So mushrooms and fungi, I started kind of from an early age just to going to the forest with my parents and grandparents to pick it there, because I'm from Estonia, and that's very common that everybody goes and picks their own mushrooms in autumn time. But I didn't really like eating them. I didn't like the taste, or I don't know, just didn't like it. I just liked picking them. And in my late teens, somewhere like 18, 19, I had a chance to try psilocybin mushrooms, like the local kind that are growing in our fields there in Estonia. And I remember somebody said, hey, I've done these mushrooms and they will change you forever. And I was like, oh no, I don't know if I want to be changed forever, you know? And so I was a little bit like, but like my curiosity got the best of me, and I still tried, and I would say they did change me forever, but in a good way. And so after that, I was like, okay, well, how can I cultivate this stuff? And so I got some grow kits from Netherlands, and tried that, and I was still like, yeah, but I kind of go to Netherlands all the time. There's gotta be like, I can do it completely by myself. And so I embarked on this journey for 2 years, basically, to figure it out with the help of like forums and what I could actually find where I was at that time. So yeah. And but after that, I like started with my friend growing some oyster mushrooms, some pink oyster mushrooms specifically. And once I grew them, it was also like a really fun process. Like, I love the whole process of mushroom cultivation. It's such a, once it happens so fast. But like, once we grew these pink oysters, we fried them with butter. We're like, oh, and they were really delicious. I was like, wow, maybe I actually like mushrooms, eating them as well. So then started with all kinds of mushrooms, and I kind of like started thinking of like, okay, what is it I want to do in life, or what's, so I just made like a list of things. What makes me happy? What do I love doing? And then it was like, one of them was growing mushrooms. Other one was living in a community, playing music, traveling. And I was like, okay. And so this took some time until I found a space here in Guatemala to start with my friend to start the Fungi Academy. Yeah, as a kind of community and mushroom school, while taking travelers also in and being able to play music.
Wow. Well, Lago de Atitlan is a very beautiful place. I spent a month at Las Piramidas there. Like it's near where your retreat center is. And it changed my life, just being there and learning a lot of the esoteric knowledge there and stuff. It's a very interesting place, very magical volcanic lake, isn't it?
Yeah, man. It is just like living on a postcard here constantly. Like, if I just kind of go out from here, we are in a hillside also, and there's volcanoes and lake and everything. And it's sometimes when I start taking myself too seriously, I can just go out and be like, I'm doing really well, actually. Yeah, and Las Piramidas is an amazing place. I think it's the place in here in San Marcos. We are in San Marcos, one of the towns, Mayan towns here in the lake. And Las Piramidas is the place where it kind of started. San Marcos is the kind of esoteric meditation vibe of this place. So that's like the flavor of San Marcos specifically.
Yes, it's an interesting town, especially compared to San Pedro across the water, which is like more, you see the negative side of tourism there and all the drugs that attracts people there. And whereas I find in San Marcos, people were much more grounded and really learning like a much more authentic community in a way.
Yeah, I mean, There is definitely more of kind of a party crowd in San Pedro.
Yeah.
And it does still have its own good sides as well. Like the San Pedro has some of its good sides, but yes, there can be sometimes a little bit too much drugs there and stuff, but the people who go there seem to be different. The people that are attracted to the different towns here at the lake. And so it's good to see there's quite of a contrast here, actually.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I remember hiking up into the highlands. It's like you're hiking back in time and you're really meeting indigenous Mayan people that, you know, have lived, you know, the way they're living now for thousands of years. It's like Guatemala is such a rich country for indigenous traditions.
Yeah, I believe if I got it correctly, Guatemala is one of the highest indigenous populations on this planet. Mm-hmm. And this lake, the towns here are completely fully Mayan towns, and they have mainly Cachiquel and Tzutuhil. These are the two different Mayan tribes that still live here, and they're still very traditional. You'll see, like, you know, people wearing the traditional clothes. And in the other side of the lake, there is one of the bigger towns on the lake is Santiago del Lago. And Santiago is actually a Mayan autonomous zone here in Guatemala, which means that the Guatemalan military cannot actually enter this town. It has there's a quite strong history of activism and stuff in there, and the Mayan spirit is very strong in there. So this lake is a very, very special place for Mayans.
Yeah, it's interesting, the highlands there, like from all the way in Guatemala there up into the highlands of Chiapas in Mexico, you have a lot of very autonomous communities that exist, you know, very close to the land and often have fought the central governments in their countries for independence.
Yeah, it's still kind of a topic, but it seems to be a little bit more peaceful right now.
Yeah, which is good in some ways. So you talk about like the mind-blowing world of mushrooms. So what about fungi is so extraordinary to you?
Well, there is so many different facets that fungi can be applied in our lives. And a lot of it is quite new. Biology, working with plants and stuff has been around for a while, but like the biology aspect of working with fungi has not been so developed. And so it's super exciting. All this new stuff is constantly coming out. And we call them the 10 superpowers. I mean, if you want, I can actually, we have like little posters I can show you.
Yeah.
Do you want to?
Please.
Give me a second. They're okay. Just right now.
All right, let's see this.
Yeah. Now in our classroom, and I'm going back.
Visuals are always good, especially with mushrooms.
Okie dokie. So we have these different sizes. Like one of them is like, let's see, we can see a church. So one of the crazy aspects, that's not so crazy, this is actually the most common, everybody knows this. Mushrooms are amazing food, and they're not just amazing food because they taste good. Have you heard about the fifth taste, the umami? This full, rich taste. Umami is a Japanese word. So mushrooms carry a lot of umami inside, which is kind of like also in cheese and in meat and fried tomatoes and whatnot, you know. So that's one of the obvious ones. Most people know that mushrooms are great for food. And I would just say, beyond this regular crimini button mushroom things, they're nice mushrooms and they're tasty, there's just a variety of other mushrooms out there that are, I would say, they offer a little bit more than just being great tasting ones. Mushrooms are medicine. So we have a lot of medicinal mushrooms. I have actually here on my floor, I have I'm taking cordyceps, and I'm taking lion's mane, and I'm taking all of these mushroom supplements. I feel great, by the way. So
you look great too. You have good energy.
Thank you. So like, but these two things, they come together in the edible mushrooms, you know, like let thy food be thy medicine and thy medicine be thy food. So a lot of really good edible mushrooms are actually medicine for you as well. So like, for instance, like oyster mushroom, which is one of the main mushrooms we teach beginners how to cultivate. Oyster mushroom just lowers your cholesterol levels and it's just generally great for you. So what else do we have here? Okay. Ta-da. So mushrooms help to remove toxins from the environment and pollutants. Yeah, that's the one. And yeah, so like that's a really interesting field of micro remediation of the same oyster mushroom that I said is great as medicine as food is also one of the amazing mushrooms that can really take out different like for instance petrochemicals from the environment, so like from the soil. You get soil that is contaminated that you cannot use for growing vegetables or whatever. There has been like a motor oil factory in the before, and you can use oyster mushrooms, they will just eat up the motor oil, the petrochemicals, without anything being left. They just break it apart into soil. So like the only thing that they cannot really deal with is radioactive compounds and also heavy metals. So this is like you gotta know, but they hyper accumulate these two things, like radioactive compounds and heavy metals. So that's meaning like there is still remediation potential there, but you just wouldn't want to eat these mushrooms afterwards. You gotta make sure soil this and heavy metals, then don't eat the mushrooms there. They start like magnets throwing it in. So that's what it's kind of like an overarching concept, micro remediation. But let's see, there is a few small ones that I would like to bring in. Okay, put this on the ground. Bam. So they filter water. So that's one of the things. And same thing with oyster mushrooms. Once again, you can make these filters that are taking out different pathogens from water. And oyster mushrooms are happy to eat, for instance, E. coli or some other pathogens and just use it for their food source and make the water cleaner. And there is also research being done by the Indian government, because in India, the government has realized that water fluoridation is an issue, and certain levels of fluoride in the water is toxic. Some countries think it's a good idea to put it in, but the Indian government was like, no, let's take it out. And so they're doing research and they found that certain types of fungi can actually help to easily remediate and take the fluoride out of it. And they're using actually a certain type of black mold that is, then they put that in the water. And so it has to be something that's very accessible. It has to be very accessible because so many people in India cannot be something very high tech. And so, yeah. And they found some ways of doing it with the help of fungi. Also, in thinking in Africa, in Nigeria or something, they're using spent substrate from oyster mushrooms that they made into biochar to make filters out of that. So there's this different solutions out there, and they're just popping out like mushrooms. And so that's the exciting part of right now, that this it isn't just like very advanced countries are making like research with fungi. Also like countries that don't have many resources are looking at like simple solutions. What else? Here we go, another one. Mushrooms like to eat ducks. No mushrooms. mushrooms can basically, there are certain fungi that can degrade plastics. So there is, and there is different research now coming out, but like the first one I think that was like famous was Pestalatopsis microsporae. It's a fancy name, a fungi that could break apart polyurethane plastics, which is I think half or a third of the world's plastics. it's a slow process and all the stuff that happens with it, but the research is going on and there is new potential candidates of fungus found that that could break apart plastics. So just that this importance of this idea is just, let's take a moment, imagine that we're inoculating landfills and they turn into fertile soil over some time. That's an amazing solution out there. Like, while mushrooms are not saving the world, but they're definitely part of the solution that is saving the world.
Yes. So
that one, really exciting.
Wow.
Okay. Oh, and that brings me to this. By the way, fungi make soil. So without fungi, we don't have soil. If you like soil, if you like gardening, you should like fungi also. So, like, for instance, we have worms and like a worm bin that we're using. Our spent substrate goes in there, and the fungi already starts breaking apart, and the worms continue it, and then there is other microscopic fungi in the soil that keeps doing it. So, like, whatever you see in green plants, that wouldn't exist without the help of fungi, because fungi originally started making soil on land. Soil.
Beautiful.
And I have four more. These are called, by the way, the 10 superpowers of the fungi.
So, I love it.
So here we go. Some mushrooms and some fungi like to make symbiotic relationships with the plants. Some mushrooms actually like to do it with vegetables that are growing in a garden. So a symbiotic relationship means there is a relationship of reciprocity happening, and they're both doing better because of that relationship. So an example would be an L. moister mushroom that lives together with broccoli or Brussels sprouts or something like that, some kind of brassica. And they form relationships with the roots. They get some sugar or something from the plants, and they make some fertilizing stuff, and they're both better off. So, and I like this because, like, this, while this happens with certain type of mushrooms and certain vegetables, most plants on this planet have some kind of symbiotic relationship with some kind of fungi. Some are like single-celled fungi that never have fruiting bodies like mushrooms, but still they're fungi. And so, like, this is like an overall idea that in the Fungi Academy we also like to promote this idea of a symbiotic relationship, because fungi has been on this planet for such a long time, like on the land since the beginning, basically. So, like, humanity's lifespan is like this, then fungi is like, it's coming out from the screen, you can't see it, it's somewhere here. It's been a long time here. It's an elder species, and it's figured out that if it makes these symbiotic relationships with its environment and makes the environment, the other species, thrive in there, then he thrives in that same environment. And that's something that seems like us humans can now learn, because it's important. Some of us haven't completely gotten that message yet.
Yeah.
So, cool thing. You know, like micromaterials. So that's okay. That picture is because there used to be this company, I think, in Santa Cruz, California, who made surfboards out of mycelium. But this symbolizes generally the idea of micromaterials. There is micro bricks. You can make houses out of mushrooms. There is micro furniture. There's micro leather, which is stronger than regular leather, and it takes less resources to grow it than to grow a cow or a pig and then kill it and make leather. Plus, it's, you know, vegan. And and I think Dell and IKEA in the United States are using, instead of styrofoam, now micro packaging, which decomposes afterwards. The styrofoam sucks, let's face it.
Yeah.
And what else is here? Okay. Da-da-da-da. Healing the mind. So this is like there's a few aspects happening here. One is like, for instance, lion's mane has like nerve growth factors and is just an amazing medicinal mushroom, also edible mushroom. there's amazing medicinal mushroom to keep away like all kinds of neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's or dementia or whatnot, and generally makes your brain function faster. And there is really nothing that comes even close to the properties that the lion's mane has. We don't have pharmaceuticals yet that can help in such ways with brain diseases. So, but also microdosing. You know, microdosing has been a very popular topic lately, and a lot of people are doing it. And so, finally, also some research has been coming out, and so that is another aspect of this microdosing that can. Well, people are claiming that it has helped them to fight depression, like depression in a verge of suicide. And I'm not advocating that, hey, like if you are suicidal or something, start microdosing, but look into it. You know, like there is this woman, she wrote a book, a really good day, I think, and that talks about her experience. So there is, I don't know, something like one third of the world population who is suffering from depression.
Wow. It's but definitely growing. Like the anxiety that's accompanied with depression, they're often mixed. A lot of people are anxious, but, you know, and you often don't even know you're depressed, right? It's hard to have that awareness when you feel down and stuff. But yeah, there's definitely a lot of depressing trends and ways to live in this world today that are very complicated.
Yes, and a lot of it, exactly, completely right. A lot of it has to do with us being not connected.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we are not connected to each other. Okay, we have the social media, it's great, and it is a powerful tool to be used for a lot of, like, to get the message out there. But we're not connected to each other, we're not connected to ourselves, we're not connected to the nature. And this disconnectedness, this like, hey, I'm living in my apartment, I'm going to work, and I'm doing something that I'm kind of like, I don't actually know what's the result of it. And so this doesn't offer people fulfillment. And
yeah,
so that's one of the things here in Punk Academy that we're trying to do is to offer an environment where people are welcome and accepted as they are, but also offer a kind of like a family, a community where to exist and work together to be in a kind of symbiotic relationship with each other. And that seems to do wonders for people. And so last one. The last one, yeah. So this is the psychedelic mushrooms. The kind of like one of the main reasons why the academy was made, although we don't really focus on that anymore, but you can always learn about it here. That's kind of builds in with what I just said, that we are not connected to each other, we're not connected to ourselves, and we're not connected to nature. And we strongly feel that the psychedelic mushrooms, the psilocybin mushrooms, are kind of some kind of nature's mechanism ourselves to our community and to the nature. And once we are connected to ourselves, for instance, like if you don't truly love yourself, that's a common thing, because like people just haven't gotten to the place of like opening their heart up for themselves. It is very difficult to take care of yourself. If you don't love yourself, it's almost impossible to take care of anything else. Like,
wow.
If you don't love yourself, why would you care for the environment? Like you can get the idea of it, of like, yeah, sure, you know, like I think we should like conserve the environment and the forest and the rainforest and the coral reefs and everything. It sounds good, it sounds logical, but you don't feel it. Yeah. And so I think this is like the first step on this journey, is to really connect with yourself and realize that you are the person who has been with you all your life and will be in the end. So better cultivate a loving relationship with yourself, and from that place you can have loving relationships with the people around you, the community, your family, and also to the natural living planet that we have. And so like I do believe that this is nature's way of kind of like, hey humans, let's crack your hearts open and like, you know, let's let's enjoy the life on this planet and not, you know, destroy it. So yeah.
Well, I agree with that. A lot of people need the ice to be broken around them and their hearts cracked open. It's like, it's so common in the modern world for people to live in their heads and not have these relationships with other people, even with themselves, that are happy. And I think it's interesting what you touched on about psychedelic mushrooms on how they actually massively increase empathy. And people feel this deep empathy for who they are as a person, for their family often, for their friends, for the nature around them, the other living beings, in this way that it's hard to learn in a book.
Yeah, it's an experience, you know. It's not that, just information.
Yes, it's an experience. I think really experiences transform people, and especially guided experiences in the right environment, in the right sacred place, let's say, can have a huge impact. Do you have any rituals where you go into nature, unplugging, you know, immersion?
Sure. I mean, like I live in a very fortunate place that I'm surrounded by really pristine, amazing nature. So definitely nature is the temple, you know, to go and to get connected with yourself and with the divine. So yes, this is definitely happening here. And like, I like what you said also, that it's good to have it like in a ceremonial environment with the right kind of guidance and help. And so like, this is important. It's important that you're saying this, because there has been a certain, I would say, like a psychedelic illiteracy, that kind of was really big in maybe 60s, when people were just like, wow, let's just do acid and that's it, you know. And that just made, like, it worked for some people, but for some other people it was just like terrifying, and they had horrible experiences. They were truly traumatized, you know, like a psychedelic trauma.
Yeah.
And like fearful, confusing, they didn't know afterwards what to make of it. And that was kind of this age of the people didn't really know how to approach this, because one of the main things that was happening was they didn't have any elders. It's like, if you're taking this whatever mushrooms or LSD or whatever they were taking that time, it wasn't like that you're doing it with your grandparents. They're like, oh yeah, sure, we know what it is. You know, like, you go for it, we hold space for you, and let's do it in a good way. So that wasn't the case. And now some time has passed, and like, we are seeing this new emergence of the psychedelic renaissance. And
yeah,
and we have elders. That's a great thing. We have people who actually really know how to approach this in a smart way. Maybe this information isn't so accessible to everybody yet, and like, everybody does not have access to I don't know, to have a psychedelic therapist sit in with them, for instance, which would be an amazing way to go about it.
Absolutely.
But not the most accessible one, and people are still dying. There's so many people who are dying, especially with this new kind of research that is coming out constantly, like, oh, it helps with depression, it helps with PTSD, or I mean, it can potentially help, let's say, like this. And yeah, people are like, wow, shit, I'm suffering. I've been like suffering with this for a while and nothing has really worked. So like, I want to try this. And how do I do this? I have no access. And so like, so people might go about it in uneducated ways.
Yes, definitely.
And so that I see is one of the things is to educate the global populace how to go about it in a good way. How to go about it so that there is least harm that you can do to yourself and to others. Yes, as well, of course. Like, so because you can traumatize yourself if you go about it in a not so nice way. And also some people shouldn't actually do it, you know, like at least up to now, let's say some people shouldn't do it alone. Maybe in the future psychotherapy finds out ways of, like, for instance, people who have schizophrenia can do that, but right now it's a big no-no. It really kind of triggers psychotic episodes for people who already have schizophrenia. So like, that's one thing, like, kind of to know what's happening there and stay clear of it. But also, like, how do you prepare yourself in order to have a meaningful experience that you can potentially, like, have potentially maximum benefit out of?
Yes.
And what do you do afterwards? What happens, like, if you had this amazing experience, like, you know, like John Hopkins studies say, like, you know, people having the single most or one of the three most meaningful experiences on their life. Like, there's more than half people who said that. So it's like, okay, you have that experience. Great, you know, and wonderful, absolutely. Who wouldn't want to experience this humanly? But what happens afterwards? Does something change in the what you're feeling, how you are, in your well-being, how you behave, what you say, what you think? And so that's why, like, integration practices are important. And while all of this can be done with the help of professionals, a lot can be learned yourself. You know, like, you can get skilled in this. And I don't know, maybe now is a good time to mention that we are doing this other project because of that. It's called School of Soma. And School of Soma is the world's first online sacred mushroom school. So you can learn all of that stuff there. How to cultivate your own mushrooms, how to navigate the psychedelic medicine space in a safe and beneficial way, and how to afterwards integrate these experiences to your everyday life, like your day-to-day life when you're sober, how to go about it there to get maximum benefit. And so, yeah, that's another exciting thing that is happening right now.
Well, that's interesting what you were saying, kind of touching on mycology, because I work in tech with startups, a lot of very technical people, and often there's an association between like technical computer people and interest in mycology. Just because how complicated and interesting and connected it is. And often, like as you described, a lot of people that know a lot about mycology have learned through the internet, through forums, you know, through the work of Terence McKenna and all the stuff available on YouTube. And it's kind of more of a DIY way of learning where you find guides. And I think that's really what's interesting about mycology. I often find the most interesting people I've ever met are very interested in mycology. I think that's remarkable about fungi and how it attracts people to learn more about it. And even Terence McKenna, what you kind of mentioned how he's been very influential in spreading the kind of psychedelic culture. But even he had an experience with mushrooms, and I believe in the 90s, about 10 years before he died, where he stopped doing them because he was so scared in a way. And it just kind of shows you that we don't fully understand them and people need to be guided in some way and do them with like extreme caution and look at the traditions where they come out of and how they did ceremonies and do it within a container like that rather than just willy-nilly kind of thing. And it is interesting, like in Guatemala, the Mayans and the Aztecs, a lot of the cultures of that area of Mesoamerica are very influenced by mushrooms. In fact, that area has the highest biodiversity of mushrooms and different forms of fungi, particularly psychedelic ones, psilocybe, of almost anywhere in the world. Do you know much about the kind of ancient traditions of mushroom use in that part of the world?
Well, I know a little bit. Like, there is stories that go around. So yes, it's true that here in the lands of the Maya, the Tenonanacatl, some say it is the divine mushroom, some translated as the flesh of the gods, which has been said is a mistranslation that has come from the Christian age in order to say that, oh, this is a false sacrament, but let's say like this. Anyways, Tenonanacatl, sacred mushroom, that the cult was existed here in the lands, like, I guess like, up to like Costa Rica, Mexico, this whole Mayan territory. And that wasn't like a small thing. It was something that lasted for 2,000 years. And there are these mushroom stones being found, you know, like this kind of like squatting mushroom people with like a big mushroom hat. And these were the relics of that time. And this was, so if you think about it, 2,000 years, that's as long as Christianity has existed. So at the time that, you know, the conquistadors, the colonists came here, there was a strong culture already here with a strong religion happening. But just, you know, the way things went with colonists, usually it just got wiped out and got made illegal. So because of that, here in Guatemala, there is no living tradition, at least none that a white man like me would find out. So this, if there is something, that is very underground. Mm-hmm. And So basically, a Catholic church took over here, and that's like the main religion right now here. But in Mexico, in Oaxaca, there is like the Mazatec people and the Zapotec people, they still have a living tradition. which means that it has been kept alive and it is in constant evolution. And they married their tradition of the mushrooms with the Catholic Church. So they named different like Catholic saint names in there and like mixed it together with the Catholic ceremonies. And so right now it has become this beautiful mixture of Christianity and the indigenous mushroom use. And it's like nothing else you would see on this planet. And from there, from the Mazatec people, Maria Sabina was one of the curanderas, yes, the grand old lady who gave the mushrooms to the Westerners and gave it to Gordon Wasson, who brought it to the West and made this big campaign about it, how they're amazing, and wrote a Life magazine article about it. And there was all this, there is so much interesting lore around that, like how, what happened,
yeah,
CIA financed it, and
yeah, the intrigue around it, yes.
Yeah, so there's really like some exciting stuff around it. And so the Mazatec people were not really pleased with it in the beginning, at least. I was like, and they threw Maria Sabina out of the town and like whatever, burned her house. It's like really, it was full on, you know. Like, it's like, oh, you gave the mushroom away to these, you know, what the hell? And then like, you know, whatever, Rolling Stones, the Beatles, everybody started going to Wouter de Jimenez to have the hallucinogenic mushroom experience in there. And yeah, so like she was actually giving the ceremonies for the Westerners. Up until I think on the 70s something, the Mexican army came to Wouter de Jimenez and kicked all the hippies out of there. All the whites, get the hell out, you know. And so it went underground for a while again in there. I mean, like underground, but the indigenous people, for indigenous people, it's legal in Mexico to do anything they want with the mushrooms.
Yeah.
It's also legal to do mushrooms together with the indigenous people. So if you're doing a ceremony and there's an indigenous person at least in the room, even if the person is sleeping, it's still legal to do that. So that's an interesting thing there. But then this thing started opening up again with this curandera called Julieta, who now I think she died a couple of years ago, and her daughters are still doing it by offering also ceremonies to the Westerners. And now the part of the story is like interesting is that like the, are we still connected?
Yeah, okay.
So that the Mazatec people are in two, some say like the mushroom, the psilocybe cubensis, which is the easiest one to cultivate so far, and that's widely done around the world, is not the original Mazatec mushroom, because it came with piece of burden and cattle were on the tongue on the manure of this cattle the mushrooms growing. They had their own mushrooms that like they had differently, the rumbes, the bajaritos, the ones that are, and I think the psilocybe cubensis is called San Isidro, so it has a Christian name still. It's still a saint, San Isidro. And for some people, they say that like, you know, like San Isidro is the white man's mushroom. And why I have a lot of wealth, it's the mushroom that helps you to get wealthy. So like some people, they use different mushrooms for different purposes, and some Mazatec people use this mushroom to bring in like prosperity and abundance. And but Julieta was, no, like this is still a great mushroom that like carries the spirit and hold ceremonies with it. And so that is now, I think, still a thing in there. And I went to a psychedelic plants congress, and like, so it's kind of like a touchy subject, because like, mm-hmm, for them there is like, yes, people coming, but some of the mushrooms are not really found in their natural habitat anymore. It's become,
yes,
a problem because it's been overpicked. And at the same time, it's a really good source of income, of economy for the Mazatec people. The tourism really helps them. And yeah, so that there is these two things, like, yes, it's like the, there's like a Mazatec elders, they were speaking in a congress of plantas sagradas in Mexico, and they were like, yes, it is good in some senses, but also like we gotta be really careful, and like we, if we're, you know, doing it too much, or like people come and like the culture gets appropriated, and so it's like,
yeah,
it's touchy, let's say like this.
Yeah, and it's like people like around the famous towns in Oaxaca, people go looking, where can I find them in the forest, and everyone's looking, and people have to be so secret about their spots and everything, and it's only so much land down there, and people are covering most of it. So yeah, it definitely threatens. It's similar with ayahuasca tourism and Amazon, how the plants is not necessarily regenerating, and people are kind of just getting carried away with it a little too much. But it's interesting in Oaxaca, the culture there, the art, the history, it's so rich. The Zapoteca people, like they're just, it's almost like an autonomous region of Mexico, and definitely one of the most interesting parts of Mexico. Some of the best food and the best art, the best song and dance you'll hear anywhere in Mexico. It's very authentic to the land and the people there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and also with the, like, you're absolutely right that, like, kind of this ayahuasca tourism, or generally, let's say, entheogenic tourism around the world, can do harm to the natural environments, but also to the actual communities who are, you know, the indigenous communities who are doing this business. And so with mushrooms, luckily, there is this thing that now in Mexico, there is a lot of growers who are helping out. So you can, from Mexican government, get a legal license as a grower to grow for the indigenous people, their medicine.
That's great.
And you know, while ayahuasca can be also cultivated, it takes a long time. Mushrooms, if you do everything correctly, you know, 2 to 3 months from the very start to the very beginning, you have tons of mushrooms. And so like, that is, so there is ways that this over harvesting of the natural mushrooms has been combated now, and there's some solutions already out there. It's, you know, still, like, for instance, peyote is a huge problem. Like, have a chance, the peyote cactus, it grows 10 years to be mature, and there is like two areas on this planet where it can grow. It's growing naturally. It's like a part of United States, New Mexico, and Texas, and a part of Mexico. There's a desert that it grows naturally, and 10 years, and it's like, so this is like a thing, like everybody on this planet would be like, I would love to have an peyote experience. Then very soon we would be out of peyote completely forever. If everybody would be, whoever wants to have a mushroom experience and like say like that would be a good thing to do, then that's a possibility, because they're very easy to cultivate on any climate. And they're very accessible in this sense. You don't have to go and, you know, destroy some kind of natural environment in order to, you know, build a relationship with them. And also, I mean, this is the sacred mushroom part. I know we've been talking a lot about it, but also like the edible mushrooms, the medicinal mushrooms, the same thing. They're very easy to cultivate. You know, like you can cultivate reishi, you can cultivate lion's mane, and this is an amazing, amazing source of medicine that you yourself can grow in your home, in a very small space, actually. So I would say that, like, yes, like, great. We just went on this psychedelic mushroom rant, but like, that's not the only thing. With the same skills,
yeah,
not so difficult. You can do it.
Yeah, and I think long term, the adaptogenic mushrooms adding that to your diet can have a much bigger impact than even, you know, it's like some of these psychedelic mushrooms, because a lot of people need to like change the way they live, and less stress, less tension, their nerves are shot. They need to slow down, and adaptogens really help to allow that long term, especially mushrooms. Like for me in the winter, taking a blend of adaptogenic medicinal mushrooms has totally changed my relationship with winter and with the cold up in Vancouver, where it's very cloudy and rainy in the winter. And it's like the nature provides what you need. And I cultivate mushrooms in the fall, and I do a lot of foraging to prepare for the winter. And they've changed my relationship with winter, where I actually enjoy winter much more than I used to.
Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know if you heard about this, that Paul Stamets was talking about this, that shiitake mushrooms, you can zap them with, like, sunlight, so they become full of vitamin D, and, like, you know, in the dark winter months, you can just munch on them, and the vitamin D stays in for, like, 2 years, and, like, it was something ridiculous. I think that I used international units. You can get, you know, supplements that have whatever, like 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, a lot. And like 100 grams of shiitake has like something like 20,000 international units of the vitamin D inside. So it's like ridiculous amounts. Yeah. And like, really, like, this is something that I would say to combat like the seasonal affective disorder, how you call it, the SAD. Lack of vitamin D that comes from the sunlight. So you can store sunlight inside shiitake mushrooms.
Yeah, it's great. It's amazing how they can do that. I think in Japan, they're also using lightning within a lab in a controlled circumstance. They're shooting it with like microseconds of lightning-like energy, and they're seeing yields going up like 70, 80% in some cases. And the Japanese have a shortage of mushrooms because in Asia, mushrooms are such a big part of the diet and the medicine, and they can't get enough of them. And they can't grow enough of them, so they're getting really creative on how they can grow them faster and more efficiently.
Yeah, I mean, you can grow mushrooms in a really small space. That's one of the things that a lot of people are like, oh, you know, like, well, what do I need? Do I need like a farm or something? Like, no, you don't. And like in Asia, in some spaces like Japan, you don't have much space. And so like you can grow mushrooms like in your apartment inside a box, for instance, and that's maybe all you really need. So it's very accessible in this case. And like in here, we have quite a lot of space. So we're growing it indoors and we're growing it outdoors. Right now, it's just the rainy season. So it's wonderful to see they're popping out here and there. But yeah, like you don't need much space. You just need a little bit of patience and also this new way of looking at it, because these are not plants. If you have grown plants before, you've done some farming, yeah, it might be a thing. It helps, but it's a completely other approach to it. Yeah.
Interesting. One final question. Are you optimistic about the future of humanity?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, like, I guess I'm living inside a bubble, and like, I see like a lot of these amazing people doing amazing stuff, like solutions going out there. There are eco-villages popping up like mushrooms. There are the you know, like, there is the psychedelic renaissance happening. There is a renaissance on consciousness happening in general, where people seem to be wanting to become more conscious and more healthy and just doing the right thing while walking this earth. And so I see a lot of that. And I also understand that a lot of people are still suffering and possibly always will be, because that's, I guess, the nature of human life. But I do see that we have a like a personal choice. We can choose to live in ways that we are, let's say, like this, maybe in service, or like we can do something that is more for just for ourselves. And also, like, if it's more for just for ourselves, it usually is for ourselves as well. It isn't like I'm dying of thirst and here, take my last water, I'm so in service. That's stupid, you know. It's like, sure, serve yourself, but also serve the others. And like, I see a lot of these people right now out there. And like, for instance, you are bringing the message to the people right now through the medium of internet, which is great, because a lot of people cannot come here to Guatemala to Fungi Academy and cannot learn about the mushrooms. And so here's another thing. And I'm guessing you have met other amazing people. I hope to see when this conference goes live, who are doing this. So because of that, because of seeing these amazing change makers and like meeting them personally and see them, they're like truly activated and passionate. You know, like there's something about seeing another human being who is like, I know that my life can make a difference, for not for myself only, but for a wider community and also possibly even globally. It's like, you're like, whoa, okay. Like you inspire me, like you actually ignite some kind of spark in me as well. And like, and I have definitely felt that in my life, and that's why I feel very, very optimistic actually about the future of humanity.
Beautifully said. Oliver, where can people learn more about what you do?
So you can check us out in Academy. So we are in Facebook Mushrooms. That is not the location that's here. That's an online school worldwide. That's schoolofsoma.com, or also on Facebook and Instagram. And I'm also a global ambassador of the 920 Coalition, which is the worldwide Sacred Mushroom Day, which is happening. Like, it's take a niche from the 420 that was the marijuana day, and that was widely, like, it actually was very effective, and marijuana was legalized in a lot of places. So the Psilocybin Awareness Day is on the 20th of December. So that is coming up in a few months. So check it out. 920coalition.org is that thing.
Interesting choice of a date. Very interesting. Thanks a lot for your time. I really appreciate talking to you.
Thank you so much.